Sexual assaults on campus is an epidemic. It's something that is pervasive. It's in the culture.
Brock Turner is accused of raping a woman in front of a Stanford frat house.
Columbia University senior Emma Sulkowitz is hoping to call attention to sexual assaults on campus.
A sexual assault scandal that has rocked Baylor University.
UNC Chapel Hill mishandled sexual misconduct cases.
Texas A&M University is under fire this morning.
Lawyers say the University of Central. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. You just heard the voices of Father Michael Graham, the president of Xavier University, and reporters from around the country introducing stories about campus sexual assault, a national epidemic, in the words of Father Graham. The numbers are staggering, but this is one of those issues that many parents and children find hard to discuss with each other, and colleges have a difficult time handling when a charge is made. A special section report in last Sunday's Cincinnati Enquirer, with a companion video component that is online, is entitled The Sex Talk, the conversation that is not happening about campus sexual assault. And it was tried to put this issue at the center, drawing on many, many different viewpoints. The soundbite we heard at the start of the show was from the video project that accompanies the Enquirer report. We are joined today by the creators of The Sex Talk, Cincinnati Enquirer higher education reporter Kate Murphy, and Enquirer video journalist Meg Vogel. If you'd like to join our conversation, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you for having us.
Good to have you here. First off, congratulations. This was a mammoth task, and the assembly, and I really encourage people who might have seen the newspaper report to also go to the online and listen to people, because listening to people's voices, watching their faces is really important, especially on a topic like this. So, Kate, what sparked this project?
Yeah, so I have been the higher education reporter at the Enquirer and, you know, had been covering this issue of campus sexual assault kind of on an individual basis. You know, I had talked to individual survivors and looked at different investigations or court cases, and Meg had accompanied me on a lot of those stories. And even in the national kind of conversation and coverage of this issue, we just felt like there was something missing. And that was an honest conversation about what this looks like and feels like on a campus from the people who are there. So we kind of set out to bridge that gap and talk to people from all sides of the issue, from students who were assaulted and those who were accused, university president, lawyers, police officers, Title IX officers, people who are really in the mix and dealing with this issue and impacted by it every day.
So, Meg, you, as you put this together, how did you confine the people to interview? How did you, even if you found people that you thought you might want to interview, convince them to do this? Because this is not easy. The reason this talk isn't happening as much as maybe it should is that people don't want to talk about this. So how did you convince them? How to find people?
So we actually reached out to dozens and dozens of people. I mean, we reached out to Vice President Joe Biden. We reached out to Lady Gaga. We reached out to students from all over the country. And what we found was that actually people were very willing to talk about this. We just needed to give people the space to do that. And so it took a little bit of, you know, we probably spent a couple of months and actually trying to find the right people, because people would say they're interested. Kate would get on the phone with them. And then we'd be like, this isn't exactly fitting what this conversation needs to look like. So it was a lengthy process of actually finding the right people. But most people were very willing to talk about it.
Well, most people were very willing to talk once you got them. But one of the themes that comes through from so many of the people that you interview at all different levels, from students to administrators to outside people to parents, is that people are afraid to talk about it. They don't want to talk about this topic and need to have a breakthrough on that front. I mean, the obvious question is, in 2018, in 2018, in the age of Me Too, why is this still such a difficult issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's obviously uncomfortable, and people, I think, are afraid of being honest because they think that they're going to be judged for what they've experienced or what they might think. And I think that was a really big part of this entire process and getting people to talk was building that relationship. And, you know, Meg and I were in college only a few years ago. And so I think building that connection of like, we know what this is like, and we were there not too long ago. And I mean, we even, you know, had our own revelations personally about our college experience. And I think relating to those people on that level and them knowing that they weren't going to be judged by us, you know, it really was an open and raw conversation with them where they felt like they were able to be heard and understood rather than, you know, us just like peppering them with questions. It was truly a conversation between us. And I think that was, you know, one of the really important, you know, to keep the integrity of this project was to maintain, you know, what we experienced in the studio in having these, you know, extended conversations with people and trying to pull it together as if we were all in one room.
Well, you just said that this going through this process as a reporter, as reporters, videographers, it threw a different light on your experience in college.
Completely.
In what ways?
I mean, it was one of those things that after each interview, Kate and I would kind of look at each other and there'd be something new that we learned. But it also, we were in the process of kind of reframing a lot of our college experiences where things that we thought were normal and were part of like what college was supposed to be, we're hearing people telling us like, no, like that's not what this should look like. And we spent a lot of time thinking about our years at school through this process and by talking to students because everything they described was everything we were experiencing, but we just didn't think it was what it really was sexual assault was surrounding us.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, just I think the conversation has really built a lot in the past year. And, you know, we did these interviews before Me Too was kind of on at center stage. And, you know, so it was interesting to kind of look back at how difficult those conversations were and trying to, you know, people were less willing to talk about their own experiences even last summer compared to, you know, maybe talking to someone now just because of how our culture has even shifted in recent months. And I think, you know, that's a really big part of it too. Like we had said, you know, back in school, like I was a college athlete and I thought Title IX was only, you know, this presentation I had to go through to look at compliance and, you know, women's sports and that kind of thing. And so we really learned a lot throughout this entire process in the reporting and researching and really trying to understand this topic that we wanted to cover. And, you know, that was kind of where it all started was us wanting to better understand this issue. Let's talk to the people who are actually there.
And we're going to have the heads of Title IX compliance from UC and XU in here in the second half of the show. So we're going to pursue some of that. One of the things that both of you are just talking about, but that this theme was also sounded by Father Graham right at the beginning, and that is that there's a culture here that needs to be understood, made more conscious. And to be perfectly frank, there's a rape culture that is out there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit. What are we talking about and how does that influence this whole topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've heard the term rape culture and a lot of times it's really hard to define for a lot of people because often, you know, people don't know that they're doing anything wrong because that education piece isn't there about what's normal and, you know, how your body belongs to you or how people should talk to other people. And I think that was really important to us to talk to these students about what they think it is and what they're experiencing to better understand, you know, what the expectations of college. And, you know, you go into college thinking, you know, this is where I become an adult. This is where you start to form who you want to be. And, you know, you're on your own for the first time. And decisions are up to you. And with that freedom, I think, you know, kids are kind of figuring out who they want to be. And, you know, you bring alcohol and a campus culture into the mix where You know, you kind of have this perceived expectation based on whatever media you know, movies you saw when you were a kid or stories from your older siblings or, you know, from that kind of stuff. And you think that, oh, this is how I'm supposed to act. And that's something that we need to try to change because that should not be the norm. And right now it is.
And we're talking about all sorts of things here. We're talking mm-hmm. about assumptions about gender roles, talking about what, you know, sort of is seen as predatory behavior in if you look at it one way, but also can be seen as what's expected mm-hmm. in another way, hookup culture, all of these things sort of are working around this area of culture and need to be talked about frankly, correct?
Right, because that's how you identify them and that's how you begin to change them, right? If we don't ever talk about them, then we don't know what's wrong or how people feel about a certain situation. You know, whether it's your friend that this happened with and this is embarrassing or I don't want to break up this friend group. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk about it because then nothing's ever going to change.
And I think a good point one of our participants, Jonathan Andrews, brought up was that, you know, this issue is not new, but our college campuses are different. You know, there are dating apps. There are so many more ways for people to connect now on campus. And he makes the point. He's like, you know, I can be on Tinder and I can have someone 10 feet away from me who wants to have sex. Like that didn't exist 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And so while the issue has not changed, our campuses have changed in like how they're made up and how we communicate really.
Well, in this whole question about the difficulty of this conversation, did you find that the students are in a couple cases they are labeled as recent graduates, and I don't know what exactly that means, but they're close enough to being students. Did you find that students were talking among themselves about these issues in ways that they weren't going to talk to their parents or they weren't going to talk to faculty or administrators about?
Well, what I think was really interesting was when people came into the studio and started talking to us, a lot of them mentioned that they don't have this conversation with their friends. It's something that they see.
Not even with their friends.
Not with their friends. It's not something that they're having a conversation with their parents. Definitely not parents. But, you know, we were talking about consent. And one of our participants, Bonnie, was like, this isn't a conversation I have with my friends. We've never talked about this. You know, it's a lot of these definitions are just kind of assumed and you just kind of move on.
A key element right now is the question of what is consent and what constitutes consent. And I think this might be one of those situations where the culture is changing very rapidly, especially on college campuses, and anybody who's been away from it for a little bit of time may not have a handle on it. So what's considered consent? Kate?
Yeah. So, I mean, at its core, consent is, you know, an enthusiastic yes, right? To do anything at any step. And it has to be.
An enthusiastic yes.
You know, a non-coerced. So not saying yes because you feel like you have to. And at each step of the way of, you know, an intimate encounter. So because you said yes to going home with someone doesn't mean that you're saying yes to having sex with them. And I think, you know, there are a lot of different elements that kind of play into how two people view an event or view whether they got consent or not. And that's really what complicates things. You know, if there was alcohol, does that, you know, that there's question of whether that completely negates whether consent could be given, but you know, there's obviously different amounts of alcohol that are in someone who's, you know, blackout drunk is different than someone who had a glass of wine. And I think what the key to consent is communication, so that both people are on the same page every step of the way, and you're not just assuming that this is what someone wants, so that someone doesn't also feel pressured into doing something, or feeling like the only way to get out of this is to just stay in this space and let this happen and then leave because I'm scared of what will happen if I say no. Mm-hmm. And so really what's at the key is communication and making sure, you know, and that respect that if you're having sex with someone, communication and respect should be part of the deal. And that's what I think kind of our culture needs to better
and
understand
and
accept.
Does that have to be verbal communication or, you know, there's a lot of nonverbal communication. The fact that you and I are sitting across the table, facial expressions mean a lot too. So what are we talking? I mean, and because we're going to move on here to the question of when a complaint is made.
Right.
And that's where I think you get some real questions.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what's complicating most of these situations is, yeah, there are a lot of nonverbal cues you can give someone to tell them this is okay, this is not okay. But when things are happening in a bedroom and there are only two people in there, you know, the universities aren't watching, they don't know. And the two people that are in there that are saying that there may or may not have been consent, you know, they have totally different, they could have totally different perspectives on what consent is. So, you know, it's so complicated. And that's the problem is that, you know, some people say, yes, you need an absolute yes, verbal confirmation, clear, concise. And others say, well, you can kind of do this or you can do that. And it's trying to find it's about that communication within those two people.
It is difficult, but it also that difficulty then flows over if they're the two people end up being having a disagreement which they won't resolve. So we have a number of callers who've called in. I want to get Jane. Jane, you have a question.
Hi, yes. Your two guests mentioned their interaction during the research phase with a woman named Bonnie and how Bonnie articulated that she had never had the consent, you know, discussion with her friends. Like she and her friends had never talked about, you know, what consent should look like or sound like. And my question is, while Bonnie may not be a member of Greek life, so a sorority, you know, is it incumbent on fraternities and sororities, these Greek chapters, to begin that conversation? I'm not saying that all sexual assault or, you know, whatever begins with sororities and fraternities, but can that be a place where that that very essential conversation begins in the Greek chapters?
Hi, yeah, this is Kate. Yes, absolutely. I mean, and I think that's also what we kind of wanted to our project to kind of be a part of in the future is, you know, presenting these complicated issues at Greek life, you know, organizations with Panhellenic, also at orientations and, you know, in the beginning of school when kids are getting onto campus. And I think a really big part of that is the continued conversation and the continued education that doesn't just happen, you know, at welcome weekend when, you know, students are just on campus trying to figure out where the dining hall is and where's my dorm and where's my first class, you know, but continuing that education throughout the semester and throughout their years so that there's a consistent message. And that can happen in Greek life, in classrooms, in locker rooms and with sports teams. And I think that's really, really critical to hitting students where they're at and where they are engaged beyond just, you know, an initial presentation.
So this is not just the administration and the student conversation. There are intervening organizations. In this particular case, it could be fraternities, sororities that could play a role in this.
Absolutely.
And I also think part of the reason why we called this the sex talk is this needs to be a part of a conversation from way early on, way before students are arriving on campus. This needs to be a part of the birds and the bees. We need to be talking about consent and power and healthy relationships and, you know, your body and like who has the right to touch it and who doesn't. And so we want this to be part of that earlier education so that when you are at orientation and trying to find out where your classes are, you're not trying to figure out consent at the same time. It should be already in your mind.
Okay. Thank you, Jane, for calling. We have another caller who's called in, Emily. Emily, you have some questions based on, I understand, some of your own children. Is that correct?
I'm Emily.
Yes, go ahead, Emily.
Okay. I have two children who one graduated this May and the older one graduated 2 years ago, both from the same college. And my comment has to do with the drug and alcohol epidemic, that if colleges can effectively, thoughtfully, you know, therapeutically, medically address the rampant underage drinking and use of drugs on campus, that I think that would greatly stem this overwhelming tide of sexual assault. Both my kids were affected by sexual assault directly and indirectly with their friends. And their campus, I don't believe, handled the alcohol and drug problem well. Other campuses do handle it well. And
okay,
do,
let's
you know, address it.
What about, I mean, alcohol, drugs, this is a big area that is pursued in your questions to the various people. So what would you say to Emily?
Yeah, so we do have an entire video dedicated to alcohol. And, you know, obviously we know that it's a big part of the equation in a lot of times, in a lot of cases on campuses. But I think, you know, the most important thing is that alcohol does not cause sexual assault, as you'll hear in the videos. But it is a tool that is used by individuals to commit that crime and to take advantage of people. And I think, you know, because there's such a prevalent drinking culture across campuses, you know, around the country, it definitely plays a role. And I think we explore that in fully in a video and, you know, try to really look at how these students see it. And how it's just such a part of the culture, you know, you can't, it's hard to take it out of the equation in a lot of these cases.
What can universities do, though, about what are the limits of what they as an institution can do to really supervise, as Emily asked, underage drinking, much less once a person in their college career turns 21, you know, off-campus drinking?
Yeah, it's a very complicated question because, you know, as I think we've seen a lot of times, you know, with campus crackdowns, then the drinking just goes underground, which is oftentimes more dangerous for students who are, you know, pre-gaming and drinking a lot before they even go out. And, you know, I think there is only so much that a university can do. I mean, students are going to drink if they want to drink. They're, you know, adults and they're making their own decisions and they don't, you know, we can't have administrators sitting inside dorm rooms every second or at parties. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's up to the students to decide what they want their culture to be and how they want to interact with each other and what they want their college experience to be like.
So you're putting it back on the individual student, really?
I think it's mixed. I mean, I think there are educational tools. I think there are rules and regulations and, you know, I guess policies that universities can put in place. But, you know, students also play a big role in deciding how they want to act.
You have a section of interviews or a section that I think you pursued with everyone you interviewed, and that is the question of solutions, ways to move forward. Did you hear things there that you thought were anything that was particularly interesting, particularly you said, you know, when you heard it, it was like, yes, that is actually a good concrete idea?
Honestly, I think the most consistent thing we've heard was education. I think all 24 of our participants said education needs to be part of the solution.
And by education, what do you think people mean there?
I think it goes back to what I mentioned before about the sex talk and about that conversation that needs to happen earlier on. I think that is what we're looking at, is having education, you know, starting early and going all the way through college. And, you know, you can't change 18 years of socialization in 6 weeks, the first 6 weeks for a freshman. Everything that a student brings onto campus with them, all their experiences, it's going to be really hard to change that. Universities try, administrators try, but that education has to start earlier. And it has to be consistent throughout college, but it's really that earlier education.
And I think the education is about what is consent, what are, you know, how we treat people, how we talk to people, respect, communication, you know, what is a healthy relationship? Also, what is sexual assault? What is rape? What is sexual harassment? You know, what does the Title IX office do? What resources might I have in high school or college if this happens to me? And really building those conversations early on so that students are aware of what they can or can't do, what their options might be if they're faced with with this experience.
Okay, we're basically out of time, but I want one more quick question, and that is, what do you hope colleges might do with your work?
Honestly, I hope that they give it to every single one of their students to watch and listen and learn and incorporate it into their classrooms, you know, because we feel like this is such an amazing resource and educational tool for students and for professors and for their to extend that into their families and to have these conversations with their own kids. And so I think, you know, at the end of the day, we would love for students to be seeing this on campuses all the time across the country.
Okay. Well, I want to first congratulate both Kate Murphy and Meg Vogel and also thank them for being here today. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.